This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I'm Greg Gutfeld.
I'm Martha McCallum.
I'm Brett Baer, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. Criminal trial for a former president who's running again has officially begun. What does the unprecedented political moment mean for the justice system? And what does the unprecedented court case mean for 2024?
Whether you like Donald Trump or you don't like Donald Trump, man's entitled to a fair trial. And just because of the nature of the jury pool and the timing that we're in the middle of a presidential campaign, it'd be very, very challenging for him to get a fair shake in this case.
I'm Dave Anthony. The Supreme Court takes up a case today that could wipe away convictions for some of the January 6th Capitol rioters. And that's not all.
Well, certainly, if the petitioners win, it's going to almost certainly knock out one count against former President Trump.
And I'm David Marcus. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Last year, a grand jury indicted former President Trump on 34 felony counts for reimbursing his former attorney, Michael Cohen, for hush money payments made to an adult film star around the 2016 presidential campaign. She'd alleged an affair with then-candidate Trump a decade earlier, which Trump's always denied. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg announced the charges last April.
Under New York state law, it is a felony to falsify business records with intent to defraud and an intent to conceal another crime. That is exactly what this case is about.
D.A. Bragg said the former president insisted that he was paying Cohen for legal services performed in 2017, but that was not true.
The evidence will show that he did so to cover up crimes relating to the 2016 election.
But while Michael Cohen was charged federally for a campaign finance violation, former President Trump never was. And outside court, as jury selection was about to begin, the former president said the case against him was an assault on our country.
And it's a country that's failing. It's a country that's run by an incompetent man who's very much involved in this case. This is really an attack on a political opponent. That's all it is.
On Friday, he was asked while at Mar-a-Lago in Florida if he'd take the stand in his own defense.
Yeah, I would testify, absolutely. It's a scam. It's a scam. That's not a trial. That's a scam.
In the end, it'll all be up to jurors, and then it'll all be up to voters as the criminal justice system interacts with politics in an unprecedented way.
I don't think in the 249-year history of this country there has ever been a criminal trial with bigger political implications than the one taking place right now on 100 Center Street in Manhattan.
Elliot Feelig is a New York attorney and was the assistant DA in Manhattan from 1996 through 2009.
The fact that you have a jury pool that voted 85% for Joe Biden, the challenge for the defense to find a jury of 12 that is really and truly open-minded and really and truly willing and able to follow the judge's instructions to base their verdict solely on the evidence is going to be extremely challenging. And honestly, it may be impossible. I don't know if it can be done. I think they'll do their best. A lot of it hinges on the judge and his willingness to give the defense as much latitude as they need in trying to figure out jurors' potential biases and to ferret out jurors who have a potential bias. The judge has a lot of discretion here in terms of how far he will let the lawyers go in talking to jurors and learning about their backgrounds. If the judge really is committed to having an impartial jury, he should give the lawyers far more latitude than lawyers have ever been given before in a criminal case. Just to put some perspective on that, you know, when I tried cases in that courthouse on 100 Center Street, there were trials where the judges literally gave me 1 minute per juror for questioning to try to learn what I could about those jurors' biases or previous experiences which might impact their ability to look at the evidence fairly. It's going to be so hard. And to the people who are okay with that or comfortable with that, I would appeal to their sense of fairness and say, you know, would Joe Biden necessarily get a fair trial in a county in, let's say, West Virginia or Wyoming, a state that voted overwhelmingly for Trump? Would he be able to necessarily get a fair trial in a jury pool that voted 85% for Donald Trump? It'd be very challenging. And, you know, I believe in fairness. I believe in the constitutional right to a vigorous defense. Whether you like Donald Trump or you don't like Donald Trump, man's entitled to a fair trial. And just because of the nature of the jury pool and the timing that we're in the middle of a presidential campaign, it'd be very, very challenging for him to get a fair shake in this case.
How do you ferret people? Because even if you get a political question, you can lie, right? You can just, because maybe you desperately want to get on, the panel or whatever. Like, how, do the attorneys, I heard somebody say, like, you can then go do some research on the final group of people before you reject them to find out if they're lying by going onto their social media pages because you have their full name, their full real name. How do you ferret this out?
So it's tricky, and for the reasons you mentioned, the jurors may well lie. It's not completely foolproof, but yeah, I'm sure there's someone at each table, one at the defense, maybe more than one at the defense table and the prosecution table, looking, you know, jumping online and looking into any social media entries that they can figure out, political donations, stuff like that. But yeah, it's definitely not foolproof. And look, O.J. Simpson obviously passed away last week. That was probably the most high-profile trial in the country before this one. Several of the O.J. jurors got book deals. They rode their service on that jury to fame and fortune. It's very easy to conceive of people who similarly have goals of you know, being on this jury and then using it as a ticket to fame, a ticket to notoriety, or a chance to carry out what they regard as some great societal good by voting in a particular way, and therefore lying about their ability to be fair so that they can hide their bias or hide their agenda and then be put on the jury. There's a real chance of that. And you just, all you can do as a trial lawyer is rely on your skills of perception and hope that you're able to figure out, you know, who's being sincere and who isn't.
So let's say all that is happening, right? That's a reality.
Right.
You're going in and out of court. And this former president loves to speak. He loves the camera. He wants to stay on the campaign trail to some extent, but he also doesn't want to violate a gag order, or you don't want him to violate a gag order. What's the balancing act here politically? Sure. Do you let him continue to, hey, in the morning and the evening, make a statement, make the courtroom your campaign stop?
I think it's okay for him to make a statement entering and leaving court. But I think his demeanor, firstly, he has to be present for the entire trial. It's not like a civil case where you can, you know, jump in and out. For a criminal trial, you have to be there as the defendant every second that court is in session. But in the end, you really want your jury to like you. If I were his lawyer, I would say, try to look like you're engaged. Try to look like you're respectful. Try to look like you're respectful of the time and of the system and the time that the jurors are giving to it. I think Donald Trump was hurt in the two E. Jean Carroll civil trials because he was visibly dismayed and grumpy in front of the jury. And at one point he stormed out while the proceedings were going on. And I have to wonder if the jurors are thinking, well, wait a minute, if I'm sitting through this, he's the guy on trial. Why isn't he sitting through it too? So I would say to the extent that you can convey positivity and likability in front of a jury, whatever the jurisdiction is, that's a good thing.
Avoiding a conviction may be pretty important here politically. A recent New York Times Siena College poll found 54% of registered voters think the former president committed federal crimes. A Reuters Ipsos poll a couple of months ago found most voters would not support him for president if he were convicted of a felony, including a majority of Republicans. A Marist poll in late January found President Biden and former President Trump were statistically tied, but with Biden opening a 6-point lead over Trump if he were to be convicted.
Everybody wants to know if this is going to have an impact on people's vote.
Darren Shaw is a member of the Fox News Decision Desk and a professor at the University of Texas at Austin.
You know, their preferences in the partisan choice between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And so let's work our way backwards a little bit from that. I tend to think that there are key traits that voters, you know, or voters sort of weigh the, you know, relative merits of the candidates. Strong leadership is one. Another one is what we call empathy, measured by the question, does the candidate really care about people like you? And then there are a couple others like honesty and trustworthiness, intelligence and competence. But there's a small set of traits that we think are highly correlated with vote choice. I will be interested in kind of the short run to see whether or not there's movement in some of these key indicators. You know, most notably, the one most obviously connected with these cases is sort of honest and trustworthy. Now, former President Trump never scored particularly well on those measures. I think people always assumed that as a businessman, he was cutting corners, you know, that he, for whatever reasons, he was, you know, willing to do those sorts of things. But his numbers sort of stabilized, you know, 35-40% say he's honest and trustworthy. The rest say not so much. But there is a chance that, you know, being in a courtroom with the particulars playing out in front of a national audience, at least indirectly, that, you know, people's confidence that, well, you know, he did what he had to do for business reasons or to protect his family. But by and large, that's just part of the game. If numbers push in the opposite directions, whoa, he went over a line. He was doing this in sort of a naked self-interest capacity. Then that will be a tripwire, I think, for subsequent numbers on the vote, right? If the trait changes down the line, we think the vote changed too.
That we have seen polling indicating that if the former president is convicted of a felony, that many, even Republicans or Trump supporters, had said they wouldn't support him, right? We've seen, you know, we may see that poll question tested here, it sounds like. Is it possible? It sounds like you're saying it is. Is it possible Trump pulls away from even a conviction with more support? Or is it that word felon that might have people on edge?
You know, I think you take these sort of four cases generally, you know, that we've been talking about, the sort of campaign finance case that we're dealing with now, the documents case, the Georgia election interference case, and then sort of the January 6th case, these four cases. And you know, we played a little parlor game here in political science, which is which of these is most fraught, right? Which one could potentially provide information that would really weigh on voters' minds? And I think this is the least of those cases. You know, I want to get in, you know, Jonathan Turley's turf here, but it strikes me that you mentioned felony, and I think that is a big word. You know, we don't know much in political science, but all things being equal, a felony conviction is not a good thing. We've studied enough to know that. However, the partisan, the sort of assumption that there are partisan motivations can certainly undermine the power of a conviction, can certainly compromise the public's opinion about this. And I got to tell you, you know, I thought the Georgia case was really potentially problematic, but the behavior of the Fulton County attorneys really, I think, have compromised that. I've dropped that down simply because it's so easy for Trump supporters to say this is a politically motivated witch hunt. I think that's the trouble with this case. Yes, it's a felony, but it's essentially, you know, a misdemeanor under federal election law that has been, you know, kind of taken to an election interference level at a state court. And, you know, whenever you hear the words novel legal theory, I think people begin to get a little suspicious. And so one question is, can it be plausibly spun that this is a politically motivated witch hunt? And I do have to say that the, you know, as a casual observer, the Democrats seem to have gone out of their way to make that an easy case for Trump. Whatever you think about the merits of the case, boy, you know, Alvin Bragg and a Manhattan district attorney's office that, you know, the Republican spin, you don't want to prosecute felonies that actually occur in the city. You just want to, you know, spin novel legal theories to turn a federal misdemeanor case into a state felony case. I think that's something that might prevent it from having a lot of teeth. But again, Jessica, that's assuming we don't get details in this case that overwhelm the kind of bigger picture stuff.
Professor Darren Shell, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure as always.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
I'm Dana Perino. Join me for my brand new podcast, Perino on Politics. As we analyze the 2024 election cycle, make sure you subscribe to this series on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts and leave me a rating and review.
This is David Marcus with your Fox News commentary coming up.
The Supreme Court will hear arguments today in a case dating back to January 6, 2021.
I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard.
Not long after President Trump's speech, protesters stormed the Capitol, temporarily stopping Congress certifying Joe Biden's election victory.
I know your pain. I know you're hurt. We had an election that was stolen from us.
That was in a Trump video hours later, urging the Capitol rioters to go home.
We have to have peace.
Days later came a Trump impeachment, with then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi declaring,
"The President of the United States incited an armed insurrection against America."
A House Democrat-led January 6th committee recommended criminal charges against former President Trump. Hundreds of others were charged with various crimes and already convicted.
The Department of Justice has remained committed to ensuring accountability for those criminally responsible for what happened that day.
That was last August when Special Counsel Jack Smith did announce former President Trump's indictment.
Conspiring to defraud the United States, conspiring to disenfranchise voters, and conspiring and attempting to obstruct an official proceeding.
It is that charge the Supreme Court will consider today. A former police officer, Joseph Fisher, is appealing his conviction, claiming the law on official proceedings used to convict him and more than 100 other rioters does not apply to them.
Well, certainly, if the petitioners win, it's going to almost certainly knock out one count against former President Trump.
Saul Weisenberg is a Fox News contributor, former deputy independent counsel in the Whitewater and President Clinton investigations.
Of incredible importance to many of the January 6 protesters, it will knock out many of their counts that have been found against them, either by juries or by federal judges. So it's critically important case.
On the face of this, it seems like a natural charge, obstructing an official proceeding. I mean, you had Congress gathered. They were doing the Electoral College count, the certification of then President-elect Biden's victory. So sounds logical. What's the issue?
Well, if you look at just the words of the statute and ignore the title of it and the actual legislative history of it, you may be right. It says, whoever corruptly alters, destroys, mutilates, or conceals a record, document, or other object, or attempts to do so with the intent to impair the object's integrity or availability for use in an official proceeding, or who, and here's the key, or who otherwise obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so. So you would think, as you say, congressional proceeding is a proceeding.
Right.
And indeed, if you look at the definitional part of the statute, it includes a congressional proceeding. Then take a look at the title, however, of that statute, Title 18 U.S. Code, Section 1512. It's tampering with a witness, victim, or an informant. And what the petitioners have argued is that's not what Congress was trying to do. Congress passed this statute as an amendment as part of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, and it was meant to only apply to obstruction cases that have something to do with obstructing evidentiary proceedings.
So this came out of the Enron stuff and the other corporate greed issues or corporate fraud issues that we dealt with in the early 2000s with shredding of documents and concealing of evidence in that kind of case, correct?
Yes, there was a loophole that I don't need to get into now, that there was a loophole that Congress fixed in Sarbanes-Oxley. And here is the question that was actually presented that the Supreme Court granted cert on. Did the D.C. Circuit, that's the Federal Circuit Court right under the Supreme Court in D.C., did it err in construing 1512C which prohibits obstruction of congressional inquiries and investigations, to include acts unrelated to investigations and evidence. That's the nub of their argument, is that, wait a minute, Congress meant to confine itself to obstructive acts related to investigations and evidence. I'll give you an example. That would not only be destroying documents, that would be threatening or intimidating a potential witness. Doing things like that that relate to the fact-finding process. Now, the government said, no, all you have to do is look at the words of the statute. The defense says, no, you got to look at it. It's not as clear as you think it is when you look at the title, when you look at the structure. It's a huge statute. You have to look at the history, and the history clearly shows that nobody was thinking about applying this to a physical protest, particularly a protest that's relating to something like the counting of electoral votes, as opposed to the congressional proceeding we're used to seeing, which is where they haul somebody up there and they question them.
As you point out, the Electoral College, that's something that happens every 4 years, and it's more of a certification process. It's not an investigation.
It clearly is not an investigation. On the other hand, it's in Congress, and it's a proceeding. So I'm not sure at all how the court's going to come down on this. The fact that they even granted cert, I think, has given the defendants a great deal of hope. And, you know, we're talking about real people here. There's a real difference here. With respect to former President Trump, he's indicted for a number of things. But a number of these January 6th protesters who did not in any way engage in violence, but who basically engaged in trespass, knowing or not knowing that they were allowed to do so or not allowed to do so, have been covered by this statute. And it's a 20-year max. It's a 20-year maximum statutory violation. And the sentencing guidelines, federal sentencing guidelines, which really have a lot to do with determining your sentence, are much higher for this statute than for the simple trespass statutes and things like that. And so it's real. You're not talking about something that's just theoretical here. You're talking about real people that got, in some cases, draconian sentences.
The court has taken up several election type cases. They took up the issue of whether or not you could even prevent former President Trump from being on the ballot in different states based on an old, you know, clause of the Constitution dating back to the Civil War. We have another one next week. They're going to consider the president's claim that he is and should be immune from prosecution in this federal election case because he says that he was doing things as president and they were official actions, and therefore he can't be charged with those actions. Do you think he's got a case there or not?
I doubt seriously that he will win on his complete theory that essentially, unless he's impeached and convicted, that he's absolutely immune for criminal prosecution for anything he does in office. I don't think that's going to win. But I think that some of the language in the D.C. Circuit's opinion, which rejected former President Trump's position, was too broad. And that's why the Supreme Court granted cert there, in my view. Whereas here, it's not that it was I was utterly surprised or it was unheard of that they would grant cert in Fisher. But the fact that they granted it here, that it was by no means a foregone conclusion that they would, indicates to me that there is a decent chance that this interpretation of the statute will be overturned.
Now, sometimes people will say that Chief Justice John Roberts is wanting to be very careful about things, rulings and what happens with the court's decisions. He would understand that if the court were to rule against the government in this case and allow these rioters or people who were convicted in the January 6th Capitol riot protest, they would be exonerated on that particular charge, and it would reduce the criminality for former President Trump. The court could be then accused of, once again, you know, being on the side of Republicans and the former president. Do you think that that's an issue that he'll even consider or the court will consider?
They certainly shouldn't. They get accused every time they issue an opinion that favors former President Trump. But in fact, in the overwhelming majority of cases, they have not intervened in a way to help President Trump. And the best example of that is they basically refused to hear virtually every challenge that Trump and his attorneys brought and various people brought to the 2020 election. And so the left wing touted that. Oh my God, even the Trump appointed judges at the district and circuit courts, even the Supreme Court, they're not even hearing these cases. And so to me, it's completely invalid to say just because you lose, it's because of Trump. So I know that Roberts is concerned about that. He's been criticized for being too concerned about the image of the court or protecting the court as an institution. I don't think that'll be in play here.
Okay. This case and the one that the court will hear next week, this could delay this federal election-related case into the summer and maybe even later. Do you think that this trial on this case is going to happen before the election?
I do not think it will, and I don't think the case in Miami, the federal case in Miami, will. Any other defendant, if he were to say, look, I can't do all of these, forget about whether or not he's running for president or for any office. You're talking about two major federal trials, a major state trial, and this New York State criminal trial. There's no way my attorneys can be prepared for all those trials in this short a period. That person would almost certainly be granted a significant continuance, and the government would be embarrassed to argue you should be going to trial, be ready to go to trial before the election in all of these cases. So it's just part of what is clearly a political effort. It doesn't mean, I want to be very careful, I'm not saying, I'm not taking a position one way or another about whether the charges are valid. There's simply no question that it's political when you go out of your way to try to criminally try a former president who is running for president again before the election. To say that's not political in nature is just fatuous to me.
Saul Weisenberg, Fox News contributor, former deputy independent counsel on the Whitewater and Clinton investigations. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Gia Angelosi with your Fox True Crime Minute. A woman who stabbed her childhood friend to impress the fictional character Slender Man will stay in a psych hospital. Morgan Geiser is 21 years old now, and she requested early release from her 40-year commitment to the Winnebago Mental Health Institute, where she's been since 2018. But the judge decided there was still significant risk Geiser would harm herself or others and should remain institutionalized. Back in 2014, Geiser and a classmate, Anissa Weyer, lured their friend Peyton into a wooded area. Geiser stabbed Peyton 19 times as Weyer egged her on. All three girls were 12 years old. Peyton was able to crawl out of the woods and was found by a cyclist and taken to the hospital and survived. Police found Geiser and Weyer hours after the attack. They said they were on their way to a mansion they said was the home of Slender Man, a fictional character depicted as a tall, shadowy figure, and that they committed the stabbing to please him. Both were charged with attempted first-degree homicide. Geiser was sentenced to 40 years in a psych hospital. Weyer was sentenced to 25 years in the same psych hospital, but was released to her father's home in 2021. There's more on this story at foxnews.com. Subscribe to the Fox True Crime Podcast with Emily Campagno. I'm Gianna Delosi with your Fox True Crime Minute.
It's time
to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
David Marcus.
What's on your mind?
Inflation and crime, more than any others, are the political issues that voters feel in their gut rather than consider in their mind. For President Joe Biden, this is a massive problem because not only are Americans deeply worried about both, they blame the sitting president. According to the Real Clear Politics average of polls, 56% of Americans disapprove of Biden's handling of crime, compared to a mere 38% who approve. On inflation, it's even worse, with the president 26 points underwater. Taxes, foreign policy, even something as emotionally fraught as abortion are ideas that most people grapple with intellectually, weighing concepts and compromises, deciding whose approach they may prefer. But when you look at the grocery bill being tallied and worry you don't have enough left over to get your kid that thing he wants for his birthday, when you're waiting for your rideshare hoping it arrives soon so you don't get mugged, these are visceral sensations that can't be spun. Not that Biden hasn't tried, of course. 3 years ago, inflation was transitory. 2 years ago, it was all just Putin's price hike. Last year, we were told Bidenomics is working and we simply aren't sophisticated enough to see it. Now Biden tells us that inflation is down over the past year, but even if that's true, it is down from astronomical heights that he created when he made all the money machines go whir, and more importantly, high prices are still pinching the average American. On crime, it is much the same, but with a new wrinkle that former President Donald Trump has been quick to seize upon. Just in time for the general election, the crime issue has taken on a new dimension. As Trump bluntly puts it, quote, the migrant crime crisis, end quote. Police officers are being attacked. Nursing students are being murdered. Women are being sexually assaulted, and criminal gangs are growing in our prisons, all because Biden absolutely refused to secure the border for 3 years. The inescapable conclusion is that none of this would have happened had our commander-in-chief been doing his job, that this parade of horribles is entirely owing to his policies. Suddenly, Biden says he may shut the border down in a style much like Trump's. Is it any wonder why? It's because he is rightfully being politically thrashed for his utter incompetence. Finally, securing the border is a good idea that will help Americans, and it may be that Biden can patch together some last-minute policy Hail Marys to help him get across the electoral finish line. However, none of them will address the real problem, which is that when the American people tell their president they are fearful and concerned, he just, honest to God, doesn't seem to care. When President Bill Clinton heard from the American people about their worries and plight, he'd bite his lip and make clear that he understood and felt our pain. Biden's version of this is to lash out at the American people by basically saying, you don't know how good you got it, Jack. I'm sorry, that is not a winning message. Crime and inflation are inescapable realities for Biden in the 2024 election. Even if they improve, they aren't going away. This pair of issues are emotional gut punches to the electorate, and the real problem for Biden, no matter what he does between now and November, is that for 3 years, not only did he do nothing to make them better, he told us they weren't a problem at all. Even the longest general election in American history may not be long enough for Joe Biden to escape these cold, honest facts. I'm David Marcus, author of Charade, The COVID Lies That Crushed a Nation.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.